howdy do, y'all. I'm Uncle Drank, star of The Ballad of Uncle Drank. It is a scripted musical podcast about the life and times of me, fictional golf and western country music pioneer, Uncle Drank. The series also stars Luke Wilson, Brian Kelly, Chelsea Lynn, Kinky Friedman, and Billy Zane as a talking blender named Blendy. You can find The Ballad of Uncle Drank on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, my name is John Paul Kermy. I am a breathwork teacher. I train people on how to teach breathwork as well. I'm really excited to be doing this new podcast with my good friend Feldy called Hang Ups, where we're going to help you change your life. We're going to show you how to transform your life with different tools.
That's right. I'm John Feldman. I'm in a band called Goldfinger. John Paul taught me breathwork. It changed my life. I have struggled with anxiety and depression throughout my life, and I've gotten through it. This is a solution-based show. We're talking about solutions to problems today.
Okay, super excited today. We have Manon Matthews on. Manon is an actress, comedian, author, producer. I think she's also a dancer. I watched this Instagram clip of you dancing and the moves were ridiculous. So we're super excited to have her on today. She's got a new book out. It's called
Funny How It Works Out.
Funny How It Works Out, right? And yes, tell us about the book. Let's hear about it.
Yeah. Well, the title is implying that it'll be funny, but and that also it will work out. And so, first of all, hi, and thank you for having me. I love seeing both of your faces. I've known you both for a long time. Not deeply, but I've known you. I know you, right? But yeah, the book's about my life in the sense that it's about, there's addiction in there, there's heartbreak, betrayal, there's a lot about social media and how I came up on that, stand up. And then there's like lessons, 30 lessons in the back of how you can take care of yourself. And
I love that. 30 lessons in the back, how you can take care of yourself. So this podcast is about like sort of taking care of yourself, mental health. Feldy and I are big on all, I mean, we try anything from cold plunge to breath work to like, I mean, I'll put coconut oil in my eyes. I don't give a shit, whatever I have to do if it's going to make me feel
I'm
better.
I'm glad you said eyes.
I know. I was thinking the sriracha somewhere else, but, or whatever, the tiger balm, but yeah, well, awesome.
Yeah. You know, I joke with people now, like there was a time in my life where I once put cocaine in my eyes. And I rubbed it in, you know, it shoots in my head. And I woke up the next morning, my eyes were crusted shut and I thought I was blind. And now I'm like, wait, does that have gluten in it? Because it's going to make me bloated. So I can't do that.
Oh, yeah. I'm the same exact way. The stuff I used to put in my body is absurd. I don't even know how I'm still alive. And now, yeah, I'm the same. I'm like, well, what's the sugar content? If it's above 6 grams, I really shouldn't participate because I will have a sugar hangover and turn into a lunatic because, you know, sugar.
Dude, this guy I was writing with last week, he was like, I'm done with cocaine. I'm just going to do whippets from here on out. I'm just done with cocaine, only whippets. I'm like, I get it. I fucking get it.
What's a whippet?
A whippet's like, you know, when you do the nitrous oxide, like if you have a can of whipped cream and you huff in just the air, that's like nitrous oxide.
Yeah, those are the balloons. We used to do the balloons where you take like a CO2 canister and you put it in this thing and it would fill up a giant balloon and then you'd suck it in and your brain would be, it burns more brain cells than anything. It's probably why I have no memory.
I think they used to call it Nas.
Yes.
Is that a thing? Yeah. I remember being at a party and they're like, we're doing Nas. And I'm like, what? I just don't, the only time I've sucked the balloon is when to change my voice and had a blast with that. But that's not the same thing.
Helium. No, that's helium.
No.
Yeah. My mom used to buy like cans of whipped cream and then she'd try and make like a pie and it would be like, there'd be no air in it because I would just suck it all out. Yeah.
I worked at a restaurant where like an entire case of whipped cream was used up like that. And the owner flipped out and just was screaming at everyone in the kitchen. And he was like, who did it? And it was like, everyone, we're all fucking addicts in here. The whole staff is an addict and an alcoholic. It was insane. He couldn't point fingers. So Yeah. So on the show, we like to talk about crazy times and also, but mainly mental health stuff. Like, what are you doing today to take care of yourself? You know, because we have, you know, all, I think all three of us have been sober a bit and we found tools along the way. And what tools do you use and, you know, what do you recommend to people? And so,
yeah. Well, apart from your breathwork class that I participated in last
week. Yeah, Manon just did my class last week. She actually, we were talking before we started, she came to a class years ago in my garage back in the old days, right? And Feldy was like the first guy I ever did a session on. So Feldy's been like one of my disciples for 8 years now. So it's crazy. And he makes all his artists do it before they start an album, which is really cool.
Oh, that's smart. Like, yeah. Like in general or like right before you record?
Like it's usually right before we write a song. It'll be like, we'll go in the living room and just do it. And I say 9 times out of 10, I've never met some of these people. And so we'll just be laying on the couch and then 10 minutes into breath work, they're just like hysterically crying. And I'm like, oh fuck, is this going to turn into like, he's got to leave or the artist is going to be like, write the best song of their career. It's a crazy thing. It's like a full human restart. Like I just restarted my computer and now there's no glitches. It's like the same way with breath work. I do breath work and there's like all the glitches just go away. It's crazy.
I love that analogy because I feel like I have like 17 tabs running in my brain right now. One of them is like this yoga magazine's trying to extort me. Another one is my kid's school. Another one is this. And then if I laid down and did breath work, it would literally just close out all those tabs and start me over and be like, none of that shit fucking matters. And let's just get up and be present with my kids or my friends or my wife or whoever. And just love the people around me. Like that's all I have to do today.
That's how we came into this world.
Yeah.
We didn't, when we were like 1, 2, we didn't have all the details that caused us fear and weighed us down. It's like, I'm just trying to reset. Cause I'm looking back to just become that innocent, vulnerable child again, where I'm just free and lovable because I exist, not because I achieve X, Y, and Z. And I did go to the gym and I did work out. So therefore I can love and approve of myself. No, what if we love and approve of ourselves now because we're on the planet? And I know that you talk people through that during the breath work, which is so good to hear. Like, I don't think we hear and nurture our brain with all these good thoughts and give ourselves the brain baths that we need because we're taking in, at least I can speak for myself, I'm taking in a lot of fear when I'm opening my phone or turning on the TV or whatever. I mean, I don't have cable for a reason, but I can't always filter, you know, I can unfollow or mute as much as I can, but I also want to be hip with the times because I also need to perform and blah, blah, blah.
You're talking about the struggle right now with social media that I have. We've talked about this a bit on here because, you know, Feldy tells me I can't read the comments. People, you know, people write the most fucked up shit on social media. And sometimes it's great. Like that you read that, oh, that made me feel so good. And then you read some other thing like you're a fucking asshat and you look like the guy from Powder or whatever. I don't care. Like I read one thing like this guy's look will keep anyone sober. And I thought it was hilarious. But, but you know, it's just like the shit that's out there and I want to get off of it all because it makes me feel better when I'm not on it. But then at the same time, I have to be on it. That's how people find my classes. That's how people find the breath work. And a lot good comes out of it, but it's a double-edged sword. It really is. And if you watch that new documentary, The Social Dilemma, have you seen it?
Oh,
We're being manipulated. We're all being fucking manipulated. And it's like, I don't think it's good for it, mental health. And I worry about younger generations coming up because it's affecting me. And I didn't grow up with this shit, but it's affecting me in a negative way. And I wonder how it's going to affect younger generations who are growing up with it. Right.
And you guys have reference and I do too, even though I'm a little bit younger, I still at least have reference to what life was like without a cell phone and going and playing outside and actually having to learn to have the courage to connect with new people and strangers. And I have that thought process going on. And yeah, it's very worrisome to the people to the kids that are growing up attached to their phone and they're not learning, you know, human skills of like how to go up to someone and how to approach someone. Cause they're hiding. We're hiding. And it takes courage to be like, okay, I'm going to go take a risk. And they're not getting that skill set. And then if they're looking at basically a lie, I'm doing a lot of hand movements for people that probably can't see me. But they're hiding. And it's just almost, it's again, nurturing that fear-based thinking And I'm grateful that I have a reference point to be like, I know it's what it could be like. Yeah. I know what it was like.
You touched on something earlier that I want to know more about, because I mean, like, I tell John Paul all the time, don't look at comments, because I can read, like, you can see the positivity, like people like, love this song, great job, blah, blah, blah. It's like my brain just skips it, automatically skips it, seeking out the negativity, seeking out the one comment that's going to be like, dude, you've already done that riff in another song, you're fucking caught, whatever the fuck it is. And I wake up with this default of like, it's not going to work out, you're not good enough. And so for me, like I went for a run with my dog today. I have to be physically active first thing in the morning or my brain just takes over. And you said, how do you love yourself without like checking off the boxes? Like, how do you do that?
Well, a lot of it is, what do I say to myself? What we say to ourselves is most important. It's everything. Language drives our behavior. And so I know that for me, I modeled the people around me who didn't love themselves until they did X, Y, and Z. And I grew up with, you know, a father who constantly caught, he was, I'm just so stupid. I'm so stupid. And so I was like, yep, I'm so stupid. I'm so stupid. And then therefore I didn't get, you know, good education or whatever. And I got my way with taking tests. And then I learned about neurolinguistic programming and NLP and how language is everything. And I've had to rewire the things that I tell myself. And, you know, therefore that, you know, trickles into the things I tell others. And so when I get that thought of, you know, I suck or I'm not good enough, I have to like switch it and make it sound like Mickey Mouse so that I don't take it so seriously, right? Like, don't believe everything you think. I think I've taken my thoughts so serious as if they're God's words, but they're not. They're my limited thinking. And so I stop listening to what I'm saying. Well, I try to. I can't say that it's, you know, I fall privy to that too. And I think another thing is about the comments. Obviously I do the same thing. I wish there were meetings for people that are on social media so that we can go around and relate. Cause even hearing you guys talk about you getting negative comments is so relaxing to me. Cause I'm like, what? Them too? I'm not alone. Cause I feel alone. Cause I'm sitting on the couch by myself looking at my negative comments, me, 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 me. But I think the comments are there to show us where we're still wounded. And where we haven't healed that part of ourselves yet. Cause right. Like how come some comments make us laugh? Cause we're like, oh my God, that's so funny. That's so ridiculous. This guy thinks I look like a potato. Oh my God, that's really funny. But this person says I'm gaining weight. And why the hell are they saying that I'm gaining weight? This is supposed to be a funny video. I'm not about my looks. And then I start crying. Cause I'm like, actually, I think I have been gaining weight.
Oh God. It's so, I was looking the other day, someone said, I look like, you know, Wee Man from Jackass. The little guy. Someone said I look like a tall version of Wee Man, and I was like, I thought it was kind of funny, but I, also I'm like, fuck, I, you know, whatever I do, kind of, you know, what are you gonna
what
do?
What would
you
that mean, keep... right? And what's the story that we create? Is that it, if we keep leveling down and going, okay, so if my head, you know, for me, if I am gaining weight, what would that mean? Oh, I guess it would mean that I'm not going to be as cute or not as attractive. And what would that mean? Well, that I won't be lovable. Like it always goes back to, are we lovable?
Yeah.
Right?
No, I mean, listen, I went through this in my early 20s. I was probably the best looking guy you've ever seen in your life, just to be humble. And then what happened was I got alopecia and I lost all my hair and it was brutal. It was the most fucking brutal thing I ever went through, because so much of my self-esteem and self-worth was wrapped up in how I looked. I was shredded. I was a trainer. I was trying to be a fitness model. I was trying to be an actor and doing groundlings and method acting and all of it. And fucking my hair is falling out in patches and I'm trying to pencil in my fucking eyebrows. And it was awful. And I was ready to stick a gun in my mouth. And it's what bottomed me out before I got sober. Like I really couldn't handle it. And I had no tools. And I thought my whole self-worth was my looks. And that was stripped away. And I completely went hairless when I was, what, 26, 27, Feldy? I mean, you were there. You watched the fucking process. And it made me start to go inside like, well, if I'm not my hair, then what am I? If I'm not my looks, you know, if I'm not my looks... You know, it's just like if somebody is their whole career and they lose that career, or their whole life is their marriage, their whole self-identity is their marriage and the marriage ends or whatever, then you either kill yourself or drink yourself to death, or you're forced to go inside and find deeper meaning in your life. And so I've had to let go of the looks thing. I had to let go of that pretty early on, and it was pretty gnarly. It was like my first year of sobriety. It was really hard. And it just made me go like, okay, I'm not my looks. And what happened was, is I found, I just found a center inside of myself, and I found a different kind of confidence. It was a more authentic confidence. And it's like, if people like me for who I am, then great. And if they don't, then fuck them. They're not my people. And it's something shifted for me, and it was great. And then social media came along, and just people just decide to kick you in the nuts every time they can on social media.
If only I could take the hair that's growing on my back and put it on your head, you'd have a full head of hair.
Yeah, it would be a weird looking head of hair, but we could do that.
John Paul used to tour with my band, and I'd make him shave my back in the olden days. So you've got a better gig now.
Yeah, it's friendship. Yeah. It was, yeah, shaving his back and making fucking vegan peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Have you been vegan that long?
I'm not vegan anymore. I was vegan for 15 years. I eat fish now. But yeah, I was vegan for a long time. What about you?
I am not vegan, but I stopped eating meat a few years back and found that it helped my gut, because I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis when I was 17. And the doctors were like, okay, don't eat this and don't drink. And I went, screw you, I'm doing both because I need to feel okay inside. And then I found that in 2017 when I stopped eating burgers and all that meat processed stuff, that my life, that I started feeling better inside. And so I haven't gone back, but I do eat salmon sometimes.
I am not vegan, but I have beat up a few vegans touring with Feldy. So I don't know if that counts for anything, but yeah.
Do you not eat sugar, Manon?
No, I eat sugar, but I've gone in phases where I have like taken it out because I would over consume it and then have really bad emotional hangovers where I would scream and be like, ah, and I would feel so irritable. And one of my first addictions was sugar and overeating powdered donuts and Oreos and stuff. And it actually wasn't until I bottomed out after a wedding, and I had a little donut stand at the wedding. It was really cute, but it wasn't enough for me. And so after the wedding, I was like, I got to bounce out here early because I have to feed my addiction. And so I went to what was that place in Trader Joe's that was a diner? Dupars?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Dupars.
You're speaking Feldy's love language with donuts. I saw, as soon as you said donuts, Feldy was like, what? That's his love language.
Yeah, so I went. I had to go to Dupars, of course, and grab some more donuts and cake and have myself my feast. And then the next morning, I was wretched, and my parents came by. For some reason, they both came by because they're divorced, and they came by. And I started screaming bloody murder like I was a six-year-old child. And they were like, looked horrified. And I realized, I think it was the amount of sugar I ate last night, because this isn't normal. It messed with my hormones and bloodstream and spiking and all that stuff. And my mom, thank God, she had such concern. She's like, I don't know, it just makes me sad. And then she started tearing up, and her finally was like, you know, I'm crying out for help. I actually need help. I need somebody to see me. And she saw me, and then I got really lucky. And my NLP, neurolinguistic program teacher, she did a 10-minute exercise, and I have not overconsumed sugar since.
Oh my God.
Wow.
2015. So I highly recommend
NLP.
Yeah, because I haven't obsessed about it. I can have a cookie now and not think about it, which is a miracle.
I had a coach that did a thing with me around money, because I had this issue with money, and he did a whole guided, you know, hypno session with NLP, and it was like a track that he recorded, and I used to listen to it all the time, and it got rid of my money obsession and fear. It was crazy. I think NLP is amazing. I was on a date with a girl in the program once, and she said, I heard some stuff about you. And I was like, what did you hear? And she goes, I heard that you eat sugar and then you melt down. And I was like, oh my God, that's like a rumor going around the program that I eat sugar and then I have a meltdown. Like, oh my, like my mother, when I was a baby, I was allergic to milk. And instead of having formula, my mother gave me Jell-O on the doctor's recommendation. Like, I had fucking Jell-O instead of milk or breast milk or formula as a baby. So that's where my addiction starts, is with sugar. And So it's still a problem for me. I'm tried to, you know, I go through phases like the roller coaster of ups and downs, but it's like, I mean, that's all I got left is a little bit of pie and some porn. No, no porn. I'm just kidding.
The two P's. Yeah, I definitely noticed this was before the NLP exercise where I would cut. I had to, you know, I have to do all or nothing. I can't do in between, or I couldn't, I should say. I did a challenge online where I was like 30 days, no sugar. And I had all my, I just became the most, in my opinion, the most me version of Zen. Like nothing was bothering me. I didn't have any spikes. I wasn't crying. And I was like, is this why I was so dramatic as a kid? Because I was crying at the drop of a hat as a kid, and I couldn't focus, and my leg was always shaking, and I'd reach out in high school and middle school, I'd reach in and eat literally donuts from my backpack and not pay, you know, damn attention to what anybody was saying, and therefore my grades slipped, and like it was always about what sugar I was going to be eating, and then alcohol came and it solved my problem.
There's so much sugar and alcohol. I mean, they tell you when you quit drinking to have like a bar of chocolate in your nightstand so you can like, you know, quell the cravings to drink, you know, which is, you know, I remember the first time I ever went to some buffet at a hotel and they had one of those chocolate fountains. And I was just like, I could fit my whole head in the little trough and just sit here all day, you know, or put a fountain on my, like those beer helmets with just a chocolate fountain. So I totally relate. Like there are days where I'll have my assistant go get like a dozen donuts from Randy's and I'll be like, this is the highlight of my month, like the fucking dozen donuts that are about to come here. So I relate. It's gnarly.
There are some studies that show that when you get like your blood sugar levels balanced, that they did on like chronic relapsing alcoholics, that they got their blood sugar balanced, they got their diet dialed in, and these people, it was like a 93% of them didn't relapse after that, which is crazy. Yeah. So like, you know, I know a guy who's a dietitian who swears that, you know, diet is everything when it comes to recovery. But we have this idea. I have this idea, which is like, it's all I have left. You know what I mean? I fucking pumpkin pie with a bunch of whipped cream. It's all I got left. I can't drink. I can't do this. I can't do that. I want my last thing.
Either?
No, I'm having coffee right now. Are you kidding?
Okay. Cause that's what I have. That's like,
yeah. Coffee and sugar. I put Coffee Mate in my coffee too. I put that like, you know, shit in my coffee. But whatever.
Hey, I did a campaign for Funfetti Coffee Mate not too long ago, 2 months ago. It's very nice. Fun. Coffee Mate was the first time I ever experienced coffee was with Coffee Mate. But it was the original flavor. So I actually never learned to put sugar in my coffee. And so now I actually don't like sugar in my coffee, which is interesting.
I do Italian sweet cream and they were out of it at like four stores that my wife went to. So I went to Walmart, which I never go to Walmart because it's the most horrible place. And they had like one knockoff version of the Italian sweet cream. And I was like, I'm getting that. Like fucking give me that. It's bad. That's all I got left. Italian sweet cream and my Coffee Mate.
And I still remember the first time I ever had coffee in high school. I cut class and I was smoking. I just took like all these bong hits. I went to the local diner and I just drank like black coffee. And I just remember like it, like yesterday, it was like I just had to poop so bad. And I went back to class and I was sitting there holding my chair, pushing it in because I'm like, that's what I remember about my first time coffee, having to poop.
Dude, you and poop, Feldy. Feldy has to poop right before he goes on stage, like every show. Like right before he has to go on stage. And I like to see that look on his face. He's running for the bathroom. The greatest thing.
Oh, dude, I've learned how to be the most stealth. Like I was stuck on the fucking 10 coming over the 405, stuck in traffic. And I'm like, there's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing I can do. I just got out of the car, pooped on the freeway, got back in my car. On the on-ramp. I'm like, there's nothing I can do. It's just fucking time. When it's time, it's time.
You got out of your car, you put the Tesla in auto drive, and you got out and you took a poop on the 10 ramp, the 10 to the 405.
My poor Tesla has witnessed it all.
Oh my God. I don't know if I could do that. I was out on a date with my wife the other night and something hit me wrong. And I was like, we have to get home. And I was running red lights to get home to go poop. That's how bad I had to go. Like, and then it gets worse as you're like running up the stairs. You're like trying to unbutton your pants. It almost gets worse. Manon, I know this isn't what you expected today on the podcast.
I didn't realize this was a poop podcast, but sure, let it out.
It's usually not. Usually we're going deep about like stuff, but
yeah, my mom was here last week, and I went on a walk with her and my dog, and I had to ditch her halfway. I was like, I gotta go, and I just ran home.
Peace. You know what, I wanted to ask, I was thinking, everyone thinks they're funny, right? I mean, in the end of the day, like everyone thinks, oh, I'm a comedian. And I mean, first time I ever went to Germany, like as soon as the Germans start drinking, they're just like trying to crack these fucking scheisse jokes like we're talking about. And it's like, what was it like you do stand up, I know. And I just want to know, I've never done stand up and I don't think I'm built to do that kind of thing. But what's that like preparing for that kind of thing?
I got really lucky because I got introduced to it. I was working at Daily Grill as in the takeout area, and I had been taking improv, Groundlings and Second City, which I always loved doing improv, but I was suggested to take a stand-up class, which I hadn't even thought about doing stand-up until I was 6 months sober. So I don't even know what it's like drinking on stage. I feel like I'd be much funnier, but whatever. I'm grateful that I don't know what that's like. I got to do a class, so I got to start anchoring myself into a positive environment with a bunch of women that were like, you're great. And so I had so much positive reinforcement. Had I not done, and then the first show was like a packed house because everybody invited everybody, and it was just such a supportive first time. I think I did a couple open mics and that was terrifying, but nobody was in the audience, so it didn't really matter. I just had to like do the motion of getting on stage. But my first stand-up set was like 5 minutes and it just went really well because I don't know. I think of the support, right? Like I'm either gonna do a good job because I also had someone tell me, who's also sober, before my show, he said something really smart that really helped me and actually I've used before every show, which was, how about you say a prayer before you go on stage and ask God to use you as a channel and thank God for giving you the gifts to be able to do this and show God, and by doing your best, by being like, use me, and I'm gonna say thank you for giving me what you gave me by doing the best I can. And I've never felt like a show was about me, which really helps, because if it were, then I would screw it all up.
I do that before every class. I ask God to work through me in the class, speak through me and open my heart and make me be vulnerable so that I can help somebody else be vulnerable and let go of something they're carrying and help them. And it never doesn't work. It works every fucking time. Just talking.
Yeah, you were getting emotional in the class that I was in of yours, and I loved it. I was like, oh, that's sick that he's just speaking, yeah, but also getting moved.
Yeah, I said this last podcast, I want to move people, and I want to be moved, and I want to move people. And the only way I can move people is if I'm moved myself. I mean, that has to come through me. So I have to find things that move me, and I have to say things from my heart, and I have to let it go. And I usually try and find, a couple people in my class that are having an experience. I could see you. I was actually watching you, and you were like, you were going through it, right? You're having an experience. And so I use that. I'm like, she's going through it. She's clearing something. Let me speak to her. And it's powerful. I think we can, call on God for help. We can call on God for help. Jim Morrison would disagree, right? He said, you cannot petition the Lord with prayer, right? Isn't that Jim Morrison, Feldy?
I know, dude. Ask me about Brett Michaels.
Brett Michaels. So I don't know. I went in a weird direction there. But like, I've been even more so lately, because I heard someone said to me, if you had a relationship where you talked to the person for 2 minutes in the morning and never said anything to them for the rest of the day, that wouldn't be much of a relationship. So I've been trying to connect with, God, higher power, whatever you want to call it, some kind of, it's like a universal energy. This thing, the first time I ever really felt it was when I did breath work, and I was 12 years sober at the time. And my very first breathwork session, I felt this thing. I felt connected to a God, to the people around me, to the trees, to everything. I felt the connectedness. And it was as real as wanting to, you know, kill someone on the 405 freeway that just cut me off. It was undeniable. It was real. And I it changed my life that very first session.
You said, don't text your ex, but I did.
I was talking to you too.
You're like, don't text your ex, you know, because you start feeling so open. You're like, I'm not mad at anybody. Everybody's love. I see that they were just in pain. And so I texted. I sent an email with like, I love you. I forgive you. And I was like, whatever. I know he told me not to do this. But I didn't know if it was directed straight at me, but it was actually really nice because he was.
No, I say that every class. But forgiveness, yeah. we have to forgive people because it releases us from the past, right?
Yes.
It's not for them. It's for us, because that resentment, which we all know, like, you know, drinking poison, waiting for the other person to die. Resentment comes from the Latin term to relive again. We keep reliving this fucking resentment over and over inside of us. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just not healthy. And so
that's one of the chapters in my book is completely about that. I got married. I had my wedding a little over a year ago, and I write about my experience about how magical it was and how meeting him was like a fairy tale. And it felt like a movie. And every time we told people our stories, they would get chills and I would get chills. And he was born on the day my parents got married to the day. And it was just like all these beautiful things. And the wedding was gorgeous. And then a month later, it all went to shit. And I got information that the person I married wasn't as honest as I would have thought they would be. And all this information started coming out, and I started realizing like, oh my God, my life, and I didn't marry who I thought. And it was horrific. It was actually the worst experience of my life, which propelled me to write the book. So it was kind of a good thing, right? And now I have a deeper understanding and a deeper compassion. And thank God for the 8 years of spiritual knowledge that I learned, because when shit hit the fan, and he broke down and started, you know, facing his pain and his lies or whatever, my first thought was, oh, he must be in so much pain to have done these things. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not me. That's clearly God's. And I held the space for him the first 48 hours and let him cry. And I saged him, and I was like, oh, he hasn't faced his pain yet. And I mean, clearly, because a person who does certain actions hurt people, right?
Yeah.
And that was the chapter of the book where I go, may I not let another person's pain close my heart off to the world? Because that's what I think a lot of people do, is they generalize and they go, oh, well, this guy hurt me, so all men suck, and I'm just gonna not be in a relationship. And it's like, generalizing is so dangerous. And may I start praying for him like I was taught? I'm gonna pray for him for 2 weeks. I'm gonna set the boundary, and I'm gonna start taking care of myself and not look at it as it was personal to me, but look at it as, you know, he was in pain. And because that's the truth is the people that are commenting, they're in pain, and they're like, I just need to be seen, just see me and just hear me, and just love the parts of me that hurt.
That's some next level stuff right there, where somebody betrays you so badly, like as bad as it can be. And then you can still step back and go, you know, this really hurt. But I don't want to close my heart. It's really hard to keep your heart open after that. You know, I've had people do that to me. I've had like someone I helped, and then they turned around and totally stole my thing, you know, like my whole training, my thing. And like, just, and I was helping this person. Like, I did nothing but help this person, and they just betrayed me. And then you're just going, oh, the betrayal and the anger, and then the resentment, the justified resentment just churning around. And like, so what? So am I never going to help anybody anymore? Am I never going to let somebody love me? Or am I never going to open my heart and love somebody else? Because that's not how I want to live my life, right?
Yeah. And seeing it as a gift too. Like, I can't say I never thought, because it was just a year ago. So I think I had to learn so much more about myself. And I've learned discernment. I've learned what to look out for. I've learned to take my time, right? If it's urgent, it's not spiritual. And the whole thing in the beginning felt very urgent. And like, oh my God, I found my the person I've been searching for 30 years, like I always felt like I was growing up looking for this other half or this other person. Like I never cared about career. I didn't care about anything but finding, you know, the one. And I always felt like I was at a party being like, are you him? Are you him? Are you him? Are you her? I didn't know who it was. And I just,
did you discover that you're the one?
Yes. That's literally the last sentence of my book is, the truth is I'm the one.
Yeah.
And I will find someone.
People don't want to hear that. People don't want to, they don't want to fucking hear that. Like that you have to be the one, you have to love yourself. Like that's the one. Stop searching for something outside of yourself. Right. We learned that in the program that like, there's nothing that's going to fix me from the outside in. It's all an inside job. And I got it. And I still think it's a person, it's a car, it's a bigger house, it's this career.
And then you get those fucking things trophy. And they last like a day.
Yeah.
You get the thing and then you're like, oh, that felt good, but it's not enough. So let me look for the next thing. And then we wire our neurology to set up to chase a feeling rather than actually experiencing it. Because joy and enthusiasm and love and gratitude it's at our disposal now at any time when we just, you know, like you do, get quiet and breathe through it and go, oh, here it is. I didn't even know all this shit and all this fear was in the way. All these thoughts were in the way of me experiencing bliss.
They say that, you know, we can either be in quarantine with a good attitude or a bad attitude. So which one do I want to have? It's like I can either be negative and complain about the situation that we're in, or I can be grateful that I get to spend time with my kids and that I actually have a roof over my head, that I've got a job that I can still do. I'm so grateful for that, you know. And I was thinking about the conversation that we're having about how we bring God into the equation. And I was thinking about how many people still like really connect the word God with, you know, Jesus or like religion. And all that. And I was producing Panic at the Disco years ago. And
oh my God, I just have to go like this. I'm like, that's my whole high school was Panic at the Disco.
Yeah. He may be the greatest singer of this generation, Brendan Urie. And he's a devout atheist. And it's like, we would have these conversations about what is, you know, and he's like, you know, we come from nothing, you know, we're going nowhere. It's just like this, you know, this is it. This is the life that we have. And there can't be some, you know, all seeing higher power. And we would have these discussions and I'm like, how can you look at a tree and not think like something, you know, there is some meaning to all this and what is God? Because I don't know what God is. I'm just one little piece of this huge puzzle with, you know, gravity and the moon and the universe and, you know, Game of Thrones and everything that exists. Every single thing that exists is part of this whole puzzle, you know? So what is it, you know, and what is it to you? And how do you like it? When you say you pray, do you have something specific that you pray to?
Just love. It's all, to me, it's so God is so interchangeable with love. I didn't grow up religious at all, but it was my, mentor, sponsor, leader, whatever, that was basically like, go to the ocean and tell it to stop moving. It doesn't care what you little man and 8 billion people on the planet, like we can say what we're going to say, but the earth is going to do what it's going to do because it's so powerful, way more powerful, more powerful than you. And so when I pray, it's just to an energy. It's like the energy of love. Like it's just to get out of my little small limited brain, limited thinking mind, because I don't know what's best, because I can only see so much. The world sees far more than I could ever see. So let me give over to that and see what happens. And usually when I let go, like I do this analogy of swimming in the ocean and thinking, oh my God, if I just need to swim over there because I think that's my destination over there, but I'm tiring myself out and my arms are getting tired from swimming because I feel like I'm swimming against the current. If I just relax and take it easy and just put my arms back, the ocean will float me to a far better place than I had vision to. And then I'll be less tired too.
It's always, you know, my life has shown me, as long as I'm not putting a bunch of poison and trying to control all my thoughts and all my emotions at all times, like there's always something better. It's either like I've got something better planned for you or not yet, for the idea of getting what I want. And always, every time in my life, it's worked out so much better than I can possibly imagine. I was just thinking, like I had no kind of work lined up, and my, you know, my higher power a lot of times is work. You know, it's just, I'm addicted to work. I'm a workaholic. And the idea of supporting my family is what I always go to. Like, if I can't support my family, I'm a failure, you know, which is a lie, like we talk about. Like, it's just all a lie, but it's still where my brain goes to when I get negative like that. And, you know, I didn't have workbook for the next month and a half. And then all of a sudden, this artist that I had worked with 5 years ago moved into my neighborhood in an Airbnb for the next 2 months. And he's like, dude, let's write music. It just happened like that. It just happened unexpectedly. And that's the way my life has always been. Like, something comes that I can't even imagine. It just happens. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't plan. It really, like, the universe is doing it right for us. Cause you couldn't have said, I know this artist is going to move to, you know, into an Airbnb. Like, you couldn't have created that because you couldn't see it.
I didn't even know what fucking breathwork was 8.5 years ago. Like, I'd never even heard of breathwork. I didn't know what it was. Somebody told me to go to this breathwork thing and go lay down and breathe. And now, if we had live classes, I would be standing at a church or wherever with a fucking gong behind me, you know, with a breath, teaching 250 people breathwork. I could not have foreseen that. It didn't even exist in my brain, in my realm of possibility, that I would someday be a breathwork teacher that would be helping people and getting up there and crying in front of a room of 300 people or whatever. It wasn't on my radar. It wasn't in the realm of possibility.
Thank God that you followed that intuition, because look how many people it's helped, myself being one of them. Because so on the side, I do life coaching or whatever, and I've been leading one by one, doing all the NLP stuff, some breath work where they're having transformation. They've never heard of it. So by you listening to the spirit, you're leading all these other people. Me from 8 years ago, I've taken it. And then social media, even we can look at it as a curse or a gift. It really is a gift, because I saw my friend, Allie, who just, I think she got certified from you.
Yeah,
and then you became in my consciousness again. And now you're on my social media. And then I got to take a class with you and get reminded and have a call with my dad on the phone who's stressing out. And I'm like, why don't you lay down? And here, let me teach you a technique with some music, put on some music, you know. And it's like, it's spreading. The love and the healing is spreading because of it, you know, because you couldn't have created breath work had you not lost your hair.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's true. It's like one thing connects to the other. And it only makes sense. I think it was Steve Jobs that said that your life only makes sense looking back. It only makes sense looking back. Like, he took a font class in college, Steve Jobs did. And it was like, why was he taking a font class? But that's the font that we have in Apple. And it's like, it just didn't make sense when he took the class. And it's incredible, you know, his design and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, I don't know. It's changed my life in so many ways. When I first went to breathwork, it was weird. It was hippie. It was woo-woo. There was like 8 people in the room, and there was crystals and oils, and it was fucking awful. And I just went, you know, I was doing a session, and I went, if somebody taught this like Tony Robbins style, because I met Tony Robbins and he changed my life. He was incredible. And if I was like, somebody did this like Tony Robbins style, if I did this as myself, like being funny and edgy in Boston and be like, I know this is wicked weird, but just lay down and fucking do it anyways, and you're going to have this transformation. If I like taught it that way, then I think I'd have like 300 people in the room. And it took a long time to get there, but that's what happened. I mean, I saw that. I had a vision in one of my own breathwork sessions. I don't ever talk about this. I had a vision in my session. It was like an early session where I was on a stage and I had people pulling moments in their heart. And this was never part of the breathwork classes that I took in the beginning from other people. And cut to, I was on a stage and I had people pulling moments in their heart. And I remembered that breathwork session, that vision that I had. Because when I had it, I was like, why would I be doing that? Like, why would I have people pulling moments in their heart? And I added that to breathwork, because the original breathwork sessions that I was doing, people would be, they would just get up afterwards and they would be like, what the fuck happened? That was weird. And, you know, and I wanted people to connect to gratitude and to connect to love. And that's actually some NLP, that's anchoring, right? I've got people anchoring these moments in their heart. And so I wanted people to leave grounded in gratitude and love and what really fucking matters, because everything else is just a distraction. It's just fucking bullshit. All the stuff we get caught up in, the money and the cars and the houses and the career and the thing, it's all just a distraction. And all that really matters is those moments that we put in our heart, those moments that we stack in our hearts with the people that we love, you know?
I totally hear that. And I love that. And I think it adds a whole other layer of love and coming back to, like, you know, the, I think the trick for me is to keep coming back to the breath work as if it's as important as exercise or eating clean. Cause it's, you gotta get rid of that old stuck energy. And I have a video that's viral of me dancing at a UPW of Tony Robbins.
You do?
The WAP, I'm the original, well, I'm not the original WAP dancer, but WAP, you know, that's that song that I hate so much of them. Yeah. Me humping the ground and dancing. And I've done two, Unleash the Powers Within, and both times they're like, you get to the stage. And I don't know if you've been, but probably. And I went with Dave Destiny. I'm a huge Tony Robbins fan. Huge.
So I met Tony. I don't think I've ever told the story on the show, Feldy, have I? I met Tony. I was with Matthew Perry, who, you know, like, we, I actually met you when I was with Matthew Perry, right? One time.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We met.
I met you guys the same day. Yeah.
Yeah. We were hanging out together, and we met you, we ran into you. And so Matthew and I were following the LA Kings around one season, and it happened to be the season that they won the Stanley Cup. And so we had been following them, like, literally flying around to games and watching the Kings play. It was incredible. And it was the final. It was the final game where they were going to win the cup. And it was this little VIP room underneath the Staples Center. And every celebrity in Los Angeles is in there, like Vince Vaughn and Will Ferrell and Zac Efron and all these people. And in walks Tony Robbins. And I go, holy shit. I turn to Matthew. I go, holy shit, it's Tony Robbins. And he goes, really? The Kings are about to win the fucking cup. Every celebrity in Los Angeles is in here, and you're excited about a gigantic man right now. And I'm like, yeah, he's amazing. He's helped all these people. And he's like, well, go tell him. I'm like, no, I'm not going to be that guy to him that everybody annoys you. And I was walking back through the tunnel, and Tony was on his phone, and he looks up and he goes, hey man, what's going on? And I was like, okay, I never do this, but I'm a huge fan. I've read your books. And he goes, have you ever been to my seminar? I go, no. He goes, well, I only do three domestically a year, but I'd love it if you'd come next month and be my VIP guest at UPW. And I was like, you're kidding me. Yeah. And so he gave me his secretary's information, and he comped me, and I was like high-fiving him from the side of the stage. And then right after that is when I found breath work. Like, I started, it was crazy. It was a crazy journey. So when I started doing breath work, I was doing Tony Robbins and breath work at the same time. Yeah,
the music that since I found it at Tony, you used it at the end of the, I love that. Yeah. That shit will make me cry every time because I'm anchored to it. Yep. Of a couple of years back at one of the things where he's like, have your hand on your heart or whatever.
Tony does so those moments, right? So Tony was doing the moments at UPW, and I had just had a screenwriting deal fall apart. Like, I was in development with Ron Howard and Brian Grazer, Imagine, right? On a screenwriting deal, and it fell apart. And before that, I had a $1 million deal fall apart, and I got fucking nothing. And I was so frustrated and so angry at Hollywood. I had a screenplay stolen from me and made into a movie, and there was nothing I could do about it. And I was so angry, and I was doing I went to the Tony Robbins, and we jump up and down, and then we're doing the moments, and I had a moment where I saw two kids, and a girl and a younger boy, and I never wanted children my whole life. And something shifted inside of me, and I was like, I think I want to have kids. And then I had another moment where I realized that my gift is just helping people, and I'm going to let go of Hollywood and, like, let go of the writing and the show and all the stuff. And I had sold a show, and we did a pilot, and it didn't get picked up and all the shit. And I just let it all go. And I was like, I'm just going to help people, because at the end of my life will have been worthwhile, because I will have changed people's lives, however that's supposed to look like. And I came back, and that's when I found breath work. And, like, that was the tool. Like I feel like God provided me the tool. Like, this is the tool you're going to use to help people. And I said to my wife, I didn't speak for 4 days. And she was like, the first time she ever got to talk in our relationship, I think. And then I said to her, I think I want to have kids. And she's like, what? I was like, yeah, I don't know. I had this vision at the Tony Robbins thing, and I saw these two children, and my children look just like the thing, like the vision. It's crazy. And wow. That has been my greatest source of love. And I don't recommend children for everyone, because it's really hard. It's a lot of work. But it for me, it's been everything I didn't want in my life has been really good for me. You know, I didn't want to get married. I didn't want to have kids. I didn't want to do breath work. I didn't want to do any of this shit. And when I don't, like, I just don't know what's good for me. When I do the things that I don't want to do, that's when I change. That's when my life changes. It's just that way, you know?
100%.
So, Manon, at the end of these episodes, we like to do a little questionnaire, right? A few questions. And if you can say skip or whatever. What would you rather hurt somebody's feelings or have somebody hurt your feelings?
I would rather hurt somebody's feelings. No, I mean, I don't know. I like both. Because I think if you're feeling hurt, it's an opportunity for spiritual growth.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen in someone's house? You can pass. That's fine.
I've seen like a person who like had a ton of pickles. I hate pickles. And so like they have like jars of pickles and I'm like, oh God, that's weird.
Okay. What's your most embarrassing moment?
When I peed in fourth grade on picture day in my classroom and all the kids had to clean it up.
Oh God, that sounds awful. What superpower would you most like to have and why?
I love the idea of flying. I think it would feel really good getting my face hit with wind and getting to go places fast and to see a different viewpoint.
Okay, good. And then if you could make a rule or a law that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
To utter only honesty.
Ooh, that's a good one. Last one, I think you'll like this one. What character from a TV show or a movie do you dislike the most?
Dislike is such an interesting question.
Okay, well, you can say, who do you like the most? Like, what's your favorite character in a TV show or a movie?
I really liked The Mask.
Jim Carrey in The Mask?
No, I mean Jim Carrey and everything, but there's something about The Mask and how it's so, you know, metaphorical. But I like what he becomes when he's The Mask because he just makes fun of everything. I like making fun of things, meaning making light of a heavy situation to dissolve pain, I think is really cool.
He's become an incredible spiritual, like, just, he's just so huge and spiritual. His speech at school is just one of the best things I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's on another level right now.
Yeah. This has been amazing today. I could talk to you for hours. This has been like the most fun podcast we've had ever.
And it's I loved it.
Hey, howdy do, y'all. I'm Uncle Drank, star of The Ballad of Uncle Drank. It is a scripted musical podcast about the life and times of me, fictional golf and Western country music pioneer, Uncle Drank. The series also stars Luke Wilson, Brian Kelly, Chelsea Lynn, Kinky Friedman, and Billy Zane as a talking blender named Blendy. You can find The Ballad of Uncle Drank on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.